In our physical therapy clinic at this present time, I have an older gentleman that comes for therapy because of some disease problems that he has. He's got a number of humorous little things that he'll say as we go through his treatment session. And periodically, he always asks this question: are we having fun yet? Now, he understands that we ought to be able to enjoy whatever we're doing. Not just what we say are our fun activities. Now, that's especially pertinent for us in our day. We live in the me generation. We live at a time where everything revolves around self. And what's really most important is my own personal gratification and satisfaction. And really wanting to be sure that whatever I'm doing, what really matters most is that I'm having fun. In the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is addressing an issue having to do with man's quest for pleasure and fulfillment in his activities, in having fun. And I want us to see what God has to say to us, because I want to tell you that as a Christian, I want to have fun. That as a Christian, I want to have enjoyment as I go through life. But what has happened is, far too often, the people of this world equate their amusements with fun. And Christians fall into the trap of thinking, if I'm really spiritual, if I'm really living for the Lord, it's somehow a stoic, almost non-emotional sense of existence. I'd like us to look at what Solomon has to say of this very profound and important question for us all. And even to go with what this older gentleman will say to me 3 or 4 times in each treatment session: are we having fun yet? And what is it that we use to define having fun? And where it is that we really find enjoyment, fulfillment, and satisfaction in life? I'd like to read for us chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, as we look at this together. Solomon says, I said to myself, I said in my heart, come now and I will test you with pleasure. So enjoy yourself. And behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it is madness. And of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind or with my heart how to stimulate my body with wine, while my heart, my mind, was guiding me wisely, and how to take hold of folly, until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven, the few days or years, the brief time of their existence, of their lives. I enlarged my works, I built houses for myself, I planted vineyards for myself, I made gardens and parks for myself, I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself from which to irrigate a forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves. I had homebound slaves. Also, I possessed flocks and herds larger than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. Also, I collected for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I provided for myself male and female singers, and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me, and all that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. Thus I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and the labor which I had exerted. And behold, all was vanity, and striving after wind, and there is no profit under the sun. Now, in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is writing a persuasive treatise. He's setting forth a concept, an idea that he wants us to ponder. And he's made a statement that when it comes to man looking for his fulfillment in worldly activities, he is left empty. And in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon is saying, do you want meaning? Do you want purpose? Do you want satisfaction in life? Then let me show you where it's found. He answers that profound, important, fundamental question for us all. Where will I find meaning for my life? Where will I find purpose in my life? Where will I find long-lasting satisfaction in life? And what Solomon is showing us is that when it comes to the activities in this world, they leave us empty. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. And we are in the beginning section after that introduction where Solomon is developing his theme. And in this section, he is dealing with what he says in verse 3. I wanted to see what good there was in the desires of the sons of men to do under heaven. In other words, I want to explore what people occupy themselves with in order to find some sense of well-being, satisfaction in life. And the item that he is going to consider now is the item of pleasure. The idea of having fun. The idea of living to be happy. Now, I don't want to review all we looked at last time in the first three verses to be sure we set the stage. But what I want to remind you of is that what Solomon is saying here is not looking at individuals living a life of sinful degradation. He is looking at the enjoyment of the pleasures that we find in this world. There is nothing sinful with the building projects and the parks and the vineyards. There is nothing sinful with having a good time with friends. And Solomon is not looking at sinful activity. He is saying, I am looking at what men give themselves to, and somehow, because they're having a good time, they're having fun, they think they have found meaning and purpose in life. In this, we also recognize that what Solomon is telling us here is not any different than what Paul and the other writers of the New Testament tell us about our perspective as Christians. Because he said very clearly when he wrote to Timothy and reminded Timothy to talk to those who had an abundance of the possessions of material things, that you should be an individual that is willing to share, to use it to benefit others, whom, since God has given it to us, all things richly to enjoy. The balance of not being controlled by, consumed by, the things of this world, but using them in ways for eternal benefit and our personal joy. So there's a consistency that's here. And when Solomon looked at people who tried to live for the good life, just being happy all the time, thinking that there's just fun because of all the things that they can enjoy, he makes a statement as to his conclusion at the beginning. And when we look at this statement, basically in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 2, in this paragraph, he first talks about what's the value of a life devoted to personal pleasure, to self-indulgence, to just living the good life, to just having all the things that we can have in this life. In verses 3 through 10, he talks about the various means that people have to try to experience the good life. And you will notice that Solomon says in here that he embraced during this investigation, what is true of our generation. He did it for me. For myself. For myself. For myself. For myself. Thinking that all revolves around me and what I can get out of life. And then in verse 11, he addresses the ultimate value of living a life for personal pleasure. And his conclusion is, it's vanity, it's striving after the wind, and there is no profit advantage under the sun. Now, as we look at this, he said, when it comes to living for pleasure, of laughter, of pursuing folly, that is, the fun things that people do, what you and I today would be calling amusement, he says, it leaves you empty. Now, what Solomon did is what most people don't do. You understand the root meaning or the foundation for the word to amuse or to enjoy amusement. The A at the beginning means it's a negation, right? So it's not thinking. It's not musing over, thinking through, contemplating. So when people get done on Friday at work and they want a TGIF and party all night, it's their non-thinking experience. And it doesn't mean that it's just being a party animal that Solomon's looking at. He's looking at people who are devoted to other things in this world. Building projects. They're gardening. They're ranches. It's a life focused on the things of this world. Going to hear the musicians, the singers, the operas, the symphonies. Everything we can give ourselves to. What does he say about it? Well, he says, it isn't going to satisfy. It isn't going to provide the necessary outcome. He says of the pursuit of pleasure and of laughter, first, it's madness. Now, this idea of madness means that in some ways it's irrational. It's faulty thinking. And as we had looked at it last time, we realized he's not saying it's wrong to laugh. He even says in the book of Proverbs, having that merry heart is good medicine. But what he's talking about is a life devoted to feeling good. A life devoted to pleasure seeking. A life devoted to finding something to make me happy, this good life. Why would he call it madness? Well, as I've thought this through, the first is that, you know, it's disappointing. Because no matter how happy you were yesterday, it doesn't carry over till today. You watch children and, you know, you see that they're sitting in the room or they're sitting together and they've got long faces. What's wrong? I'm bored. Well, I'm not making fun of children because we do the same thing as adults. If we don't have something to amuse ourselves, we're bored. And what it really shows is if I'm depending upon the external to give me a sense of well-being, I am really empty inside. As Tozer states in that treatise he wrote on the great God entertainment, he says this insatiable desire to make oneself happy with the external is a disclosure of the fact that there is a dearth on the inside. We're just empty, and we need something to amuse ourselves. Why is laughter, why is the good life, why is pleasure seeking madness? We're not thinking it through because its enjoyment is so short-lived. It disappoints, and I need to find something bigger and better. The other is the fact that at times it can be destructive. Individuals who give themselves to that pleasure-seeking lifestyle find they need something bigger and better than what they did before. Doesn't give them that same sense of euphoria, of feeling good. They want more. And when it's taken to the extremes beyond what Solomon is doing here, It can be injurious. It can bring personal harm. It can be destructive. All we have to do is look at what comes into the news when we have the frivolicking that goes along with spring break. All we have to do is look at the music festivals down in Austin. And this year, in the beginning of it, as they're all getting ready to revel on 6th Street, they had to have a moment of silence for the four people that were killed by the drunk driver in last year's festivities. When it goes to the extremes, it becomes destructive. It's madness. It's irrational. How people can think by getting, you know, to where they don't have to think anymore, they're just feeling so good that this is fulfillment. And I think the third reason why Solomon can call it madness, and what to me is really most important, is that the pursuit of pleasure is delusional. What I mean by that is, when people are just in the state of having fun, they are deluded into thinking everything's okay. They're deluded into thinking, I'm able to enjoy life, so everything must be fine. And what God does is God brings about the calamities in life to shake us up and realize there is something more than the things of this world. And if my whole life is devoted to the pursuit of pleasure, it's madness. It's irrational. Because I fail to consider what's really most important in life. And when the door of my temporal existence slams shut, and I pass through the darkness of death, how much am I really ready for eternal life? For an everlasting existence? It's delusional. Solomon said that he was seeking to find an understanding of what individuals found so meaningful in just a life devoted to personal pleasure. And as he did so, you'll notice the constraint that was upon him. He said in verse 2 that, verse 3, that he explored with his mind, and his mind was still guiding him. So as Solomon gave himself to these enjoyments that people pursued, he wasn't irrational. He wasn't just guided by his emotions and his feelings. I'm thinking it through and making sure my faculties are still at work. In the same way, you'll notice he says in verse 9, I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom also stood by me. He thought through what he was doing and considered why he was doing it. Now, what are the categories that Solomon pursued? Well, the first is, he pursued, as he says here, how to stimulate his body with wine. In other words, the stimulants that cause individuals to have that good feeling that everything's all right. And when you go to excesses, to recognize that you can't relate correctly to reality. And Solomon wanted to see, what is the benefit from a life devoted to wine? Today we could say the drug culture, to giving oneself over to the stimulants that enable us to have a good time. The second thing he said he gave himself to are creative works. I want to use my creative abilities. So what does he do? He says he built houses for himself. And when we think about Solomon and all of his building projects, Solomon brought about the golden age in the history of Israel. With all the affluence and benefit that was there, the spectacularness of his palace, of his homes, of cities that he built, and not just the structures of the buildings, but associated with that, he says he planted gardens and vineyards. And he made parks. And by the way, this word in Hebrew translated as parks has the word in Greek by which we get our English word paradise. He made this tranquil place of beauty that was like paradise on earth, that individuals could walk through it and enjoy just all of the visual stimulus, the sense of peace and tranquility that could be found in his parks, in his ponds and fountains that he used to water the gardens that were around him. And so his creative activities in building things for himself, to have a sense of satisfaction in what he had accomplished. Boy, having somebody to do the work for you, isn't that nice? Now sometimes Kathy and I will be sitting, we finish having our dinner and we've enjoyed the conversation with one another, and we sure wish Gertrude would come and clean the table. In other words, just the joy of what it is to have somebody to wait on you, your every whim and fancy, to provide you with what you need and to clean up after you so you have nothing at all to do. He says, I had a large number of servants, even some born in my own home. I had the big possession of the herds, the flocks, the ranches. I collected for myself the gold and the silver. And so prolific was Solomon's accomplishments. Because of his wisdom, people came from all over the world to find answers from Solomon and brought gifts of tribute to him, in addition to the nations that were subjected to the rule of Israel under his father David, and they had to pay their annual tribute. It says in the days of Solomon that gold was so prevalent that silver meant absolutely nothing. Silver was considered, it's not much more than a copper penny, if there's any copper in your penny anymore, because of the abundance and the affluence that was there. I had the entertainment every night, the singers, the musicians, just like going to the theater, turning on the radio and enjoying the music. It was there available for him at all times. Everything to soothe him and make him feel good. Sexual expression and sexual desire. Many concubines. And what he says is that he kept growing and increasing. He was greater than all who preceded him in Jerusalem. And what we don't see Solomon saying in the book of Ecclesiastes that was valid for after him, there was no one like Solomon and the days that were true of him. And as we mentioned last time, the thing that was so unique with Solomon, like the song of Abba, money, 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 it sure must be funny in the rich man's world. He had no limitation on what he could take. Anything I desired, verse 11 or 10, I took it. I enjoyed it. I had it available. And so Solomon says, I was able to experience whatever I desired, and that people enviously think, if I just had this, if I could just do that, I'd be happy, and I'd have a sense of well-being. And he says, as he considered all of this, verse 10, whatever I desired, I didn't withhold from my heart any pleasure, and my heart was pleased. Solomon said, I had a happy situation in life. I was having fun. And this is the reward for all my labor. Now that is a statement saying, if you're living for self-fulfillment and you're having fun, that's all you're going to get. That's your reward. The deceptiveness is that short-lived time of enjoyment. So what does he say? So I considered all my activities, which my hands had done, and the labor with which I exerted myself, and behold, all was vanity. That is, emptiness short-lived, just a transitory expression of joy. And it was striving after the wind. It was a fruitless, frustrating existence, because there's never contentment. You always want more. I remember a number of years ago reading of an interview that was done with one of the Rockefellers, and said, when is it that someone has enough money? And his answer was, when he has a little bit more than what he presently possesses. It's striving after the wind. There'll never be fulfillment. You always want more. And there is no profit, that is, no advantage, no real gain, nothing of lasting value in what's done. What's so difficult for us to comprehend is how people living in a third world country could be happy when they don't have all the things that we have. Because we're so convinced that it's all the affluence that really makes us happy. And the reality is, it's madness. It's a clamoring after something that might give you some momentary gratification. But if you really sit down and say, how meaningful now is my life because of all the trips I've been able to take? How meaningful is my life because of what building projects I've been able to accomplish? How meaningful is my life because of the business I've been able to build? How meaningful is my life because of all the degrees I've been able to accumulate for myself? The answer is, it's vanity if that's what you're living for. It's going to deceive you. It's going to let you down. As one commentary stated, despite riches and self-enjoyment, we may still be empty shells and our life gains only as substantial as the wind. Earthly values have a tendency to let one down and thoroughly disappoint. The point is that money and the pleasures it can buy do not lift us out of the realm of earthbound frustrations. Now, Solomon will continue this thought in the rest of this chapter and bring us to the conclusion that the only place of real fulfillment, of real enjoyment, is in the Lord. Because at His right hand are the pleasures forevermore. And if you devote your life to finding fulfillment, satisfaction, and meaning in the things of this world, you're going to miss out on the real enjoyment that is in life, in relationship with God. You can't live for both. You're either living to fulfill yourself with being happy in the things this world can give, or you're living to know your God and please Him. Jesus said, he that seeks to gain his life will what? Lose it. But he that loses his life for my sake will what? Gain it. And we often think of that in the concept of, well, if you're living for the Lord, what you're going to have is eternal life. But what I need to understand is that the one who believes in Him, what will flow from Him are rivers of living water. There is a joy. There is a happiness. There is a vibrancy that belongs to the people of God that the things of this world can never give. And the deception that is there is that the devil makes us think, if we're Christian people, we have no joy and happiness. But if we live for the things of this world, then we'll have real fun and happiness. The reality is, living for the things of this world will disappoint. If you think about it like Solomon, you'll say, it's left me empty, and it has no lasting value. But when God is the center of your life, there is an enrichment and an enjoyment that is indescribable. And so the point of what he's saying is, if you really want to be happy, if you really want a life of fulfillment, don't devote yourself to what's going to disappoint the material things of this world. Seek first his kingdom, his righteousness, and the riches of God. Not necessarily in physical, temporal prosperity, but the things that are far greater than anything this world could ever offer will be yours in abundance. Let's pray.